Hello, welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. May 21st was an unusual day in Kazakhstan. This is the day when, despite unprecedented crackdown on activists and journalists, hundreds of citizens went out to protest against the government's planned land reform. The demonstration might have started on one-point agenda, but it has quickly expanded to numerous other issues, including economy, unemployment. Even Nazarbayev wasn't spared from direct criticism of the protesters. What happened during that day? Why people were so angry and why authorities were so much in panic? What does it indicate about the future and what are the lessons to learn from the event? This is what we are going to talk in the Majlis today. To discuss the subject, I am joined by Joanna Lilis, Eurasia correspondent in Kazakhstan. Joanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Also from Kazakhstan, Igrim Toluhanova, Kazakhstan reporter for Convoy Bulletin. Igrim, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlag Owozi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bruce is also joining us today on the phone. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you much.
Thank you. Thank you for being part of the Majlis today. Let's talk a little bit about the events. What really happened on May 21st in the days leading to that? Joanna, let's start with you.
To give a bit of background to the protest, the protesters were protesting about land reforms in Kazakhstan that were about to be enacted this summer. The reforms were actually passed last autumn, but they proved very contentious as the time came to enact the reforms. The reforms aimed to put more land into the hands of private investors because the government argues that the agricultural sector really needs investment, including foreign investment. And the protesters believe, some of the protesters believe that land shouldn't be sold at all, many of the protesters were particularly against a provision that allowed foreigners to take part in land auctions as long as they were with a majority Kazakh partner. They believe that this might open a sort of backdoor route for foreigners to own land in Kazakhstan. And this is just a very sensitive issue. It's not the first time there have been protests about plans to lease or sell land in Kazakhstan. There was a large one in 2010, in fact. So that's what the protests were about. And that's what brought people out onto the streets. Although earlier in the month, President Nazarbayev actually froze the reforms because protests had started to break out in cities around Kazakhstan, and he actually imposed a moratorium on those reforms until the end of the year, pending further discussion, and set up a commission, including a few civil society campaigners, to actually discuss the way forward. But that just proved maybe too little too late, and despite all efforts to prevent them, demonstrators took to the streets in various cities.
Right. When people were on the street, Igrim, it seems that land privatization wasn't the only agenda anymore.
Yes, people were mostly outraged because of the government's corruption, I guess, that they were not satisfied with the economy and loss of jobs and other issues. So there was a mixed population who went to protest. Some of them went to protest against land reform. Some of them went to protest against Nazarbayev. So, yeah, it was a mixture.
Right. Bruce, you also had a story on that subject. Perhaps you might wish to add something in terms of the changing agenda that we have seen on the day of protest, which is May 21st.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been some issues that have bothered various sectors or sections of Kazakhstan society, and there's been a little bit of discontent for, pretty much since independence, actually, with some of the policies that the government has. But, once this thing started, people had a chance to get out and vent some of the pent-up frustration they've had for a while. And certainly one of the biggest factors playing a role in this is the fact that Kazakhstan's economy has been in decline for a while here. So while some of these issues that people were unhappy with for years and years, they were able to contain them for the most part because by and large the economy was doing well and they could see that their own lives were improving, or for the majority of Kazakhstan's population, they could see that the standard of living was improving gradually, and then all of a sudden we've gone in the other direction here lately. So any of the issues that they had in the past that they were unhappy with, not content with, all of a sudden seemed a lot more important to them again and came back to the fore. And those issues were also expressed, you know, publicly during these protests too. So it wasn't just about land reform or any even 5 or 10 issues. I mean, there was a wide variety of complaints being aired on May 21st.
Right. The other thing, kind of not as surprising perhaps, but an important thing to mention here, Kazakhstan, as you, Bruce, mentioned, I agree, you mentioned that the country was going through lots of different issues, different problems, economic downturn and everything. And perhaps the lately we have seen the biggest challenge to the Kazakh authorities were the devaluation of tenge. But even then, we did not see a level of protest that we have seen, which started from the land privatization. What was sensitive about this specific issue, which brought lots of people together on the street, Giovanna?
Well, I mean, I would say that it's a very emotional issue. I mean, you're absolutely right to say that despite all the economic problems that Kazakhstan's been suffering for about 2 years, we haven't seen any protests of this scale. We saw protests a couple of years ago against the currency devaluation, but they didn't bring anywhere near this number of people out and not anywhere near as geographically widespread. So I can only surmise that the answer to your question is that the question of how land is dealt with is something that's very sensitive and emotional to many people in Kazakhstan. It arouses a sense of patriotism, and that they feel very strongly that you know, maybe the land should belong to the people, and certainly it shouldn't belong to foreigners. That appears to be what they feel.
Aygerim, was it a spontaneous event, or there was some planning behind all these protests?
There were actually plannings on social media, and actually people who planned these protests on May 21st, they were detained. Right, they are detained right now. Most of them detained for 15 days so that they can't go to protest. Government this way, I guess, tried to identify some of the leaders of the protest and hoping that if they detain the leaders, then people will not come to the protest. But as we saw from recent reports from many media outlets, people did come to the protest, mainly because they are mostly tired that government doesn't listen to their opinions and try to shut down every activity that they're trying to initiate. And many people say that the land is the last drop in their patience, including all of this devaluation, all of this corruption, and the land is the last thing that is left, and the government is trying to sell it, so that's why people... it was the last straw for them, and they were outraged.
Yeah. Giovanna, as Aygerim mentioned, we also know from your reportings from Kazakhstan that there are some people who are active on the Facebook in terms of organization of this event. How you would describe that, the entire masses of people coming to the street? Was it part of an organization? Was it a spontaneous event? How this took place, this event?
Well, we can't describe it as spontaneous because, as Aygerim said, you know, there had been quite a lot of organization taking place on Facebook, if you want to call it organization, mostly Facebook and other social media too. So we wouldn't really say it was spontaneous. But what's perhaps noticeable about it is that it seems to be very grassroots. I mean, Kazakhstan has almost no political opposition, no formal political opposition, due to years of pressure on the opposition, and so there's not really any organized political opposition at work in these protests. So this is really a grassroots movement that is involving all kinds of ordinary citizens who really have been over many years, haven't really shown much interest in politics, as far as we've noticed. It's often stated in the media that Kazakh public is apathetic, politically apathetic. And I think that's proven to be a myth, in fact. Now we can see that the public is becoming fired up about something and is prepared to protest if they feel strongly enough about an issue. And of course, as Bruce said, there are many other broader grievances fueling this protest movement.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, it was said like it was a grassroots movement by the people. And again, it was happening throughout the country, right? Or there was a kind of a strong concentration on some point and lesser extent to the other place?
You know, I didn't see that much news coming out of the very south of Kazakhstan, but I think it would be fair to say that this protest was pretty much all the way across the country. And I think that's the most, I'll say, interesting part of this whole protest. As Joanna rightly pointed out, this was a grassroots, purely grassroots movement. And if you look at the pictures of the people who were participating in the protest, you will see the young and the old and, you know, from various people who are dressed, obviously, and have some kind of work, employment that gives them a fairly good lifestyle, and other people who seem to be just simple workers. So, you know, I thought that was one of the more fascinating things about this protest, was it really did turn out a broad segment of society behind these protests anyway. So this presents a real problem to the Kazakh government, because they can't target or isolate just one or two particular groups. This really cuts across the board.
Joanna, Bruce was saying, and obviously you are on the ground, you might have noticed it more than what we did here in Prague. The news of protest and clashes, most of them were coming from southern Kazakhstan, not that much of western Kazakhstan. Is it your reading?
It's true to say that the biggest protest, I think by quite a long way on Saturday, last weekend, was in Almaty. That was today. I mean, we also saw, we don't really know how many people protested in any of the cities at this point, but we also saw, you know, in Astana as well, and in there were quite a lot of reports of protesting in the northwest, in the city of Oral. And I think, although we didn't hear about a lot of about any major protests in the West on Saturday, that's partly because they were perhaps eclipsed by the larger protests in Almaty. And we should certainly note that some of the larger protests that took place when these demonstrations first broke out spontaneously in late April and early May did happen in the west of Kazakhstan, cities like Atyrau and Aktobe, both of which are oil hubs, of course. So I think we can say that there's a strong or a reasonably strong protest mood in the energy-rich West as well.
The fact that you mentioned several occasions, Joanna, now I'm going to Igrim, where you were based, and the fact that more people were coming out in Almaty or the major cities, what does it say in terms of nature of problem that they are protesting about?
When I was actually in Astana during this protest, and there was not much protest in the capital, but Almaty, there were many people in Almaty, and I think that the number of protesters, it depends on the region, because as we saw, the western region had the biggest number of protesters, and I've talked to many people in western, in Atyrau particularly, and they say that they protest because they know about the foreign companies working in this oil-rich city, mm-hmm. and they feel kind of discrimination, and that's why they are afraid that if land will be sold, they can be like disgust in their own native country. As for Almaty, people there all the time, I think, have high level of civil activity, and they protest often, I would say, in Almaty.
That's interesting. Joanna, were you surprised about the fact that despite advance arrests, threats, and hundreds of people did go outside and protest this, and the way they confronted the challenges posed by the authorities. Were you surprised by that?
Yes, I was surprised by that because it is relatively rare for there to be public protest in Kazakhstan because it is so tightly controlled. And of course, we should point out here that the authorities' justification for arresting hundreds of people in what really was a security operation that was unprecedented in independent Kazakhstan was that these people were breaking Kazakhstan's law on public assembly because they didn't have permission to rally. And we have to remember that point. That's the reason the authorities gave them that they were arrested. So evidently, you know, the people who went out to protest, who must have, since there were hundreds of arrests all over the country, I mean, a Human Rights Watch tally has it at over 500, and there must have been, you know, quite a lot more than that that went out to protest over the country, and they knew that they were facing the possibility of arrest. So in to some degree, yes, I can say I was surprised because, you know, it is a risk. We have, as I said earlier, many commentators see citizens of Kazakhstan as often not willing to protest, partly because of the risks that they run of arrest and so on. And let's not forget also that the last significant bout of public unrest was in 2011 in the oil town of Zhangozek, mm-hmm. when an oil strike spiraled out of control and protesters, 15 of them, were shot dead by police. So to sum up, yes, I think it's quite surprising that hundreds of people did take to the streets to protest over land reform on Saturday.
Aygerim, were people that you spoke to were aware what they are going to face once they are on the street protesting against the government?
I think that people who were very active on social media trying to, I guess, promote protest, they're now facing very serious punishments. Not only they're detained for 15 days, but for some of the activists, I don't know who, but they somehow do a fake report that they were trying to steal something, or they're trying to take a seizure of power, and they can face jail for up to 15 years. And of course, it's very sad because even journalists are not allowed to go to this court. It all goes in these closed rooms during late night. And it's very disturbing to hear when the government does not respect the rights of their own citizens.
Bruce, what was behind the authorities' panic? Like social media was blocked and several websites were blocked and tens of activists were detained in advance.
Well, the first thing we got to remember is throughout Kazakhstan's history of independence, they never had this kind of protest before. Even, you know, and I made the point in some of my articles that we haven't seen anything like this since about 20 years ago. But Kazakhstan was that was when they were newly independent and they were kind of, everyone was kind of getting adjusted to the new realities of being there. But they never had a protest that was organized nationwide like this. So, you know, and then of course social media is a relatively new factor in Kazakhstan too. So, you know, the Kazakh authorities, for one, they haven't had to face this in 20 years. Now they have the addition of social media that's spreading the word. You know, and like I said, they just don't have the kind of experience lately with this kind of protest. So it seems like faced with this challenge that they knew was coming, they decided to resort to the authoritarian practices of trying to scare people off by, you know, going out and arresting perceived facilitators or organizers of this action in the hopes that by doing that and publicizing it, they would scare people away from coming out and protest last Saturday. But clearly it didn't work. You know, you have to wonder where we're going to go from here, because even the Kazakh authorities have got to be aware of the fact that this hasn't, their actions to prevent this did not work in the end. And I think the government is a little bit confused and very worried at the moment about what actions they need to take to be able to rein this in and keep it from, hopefully just make it go away, but certainly keep it from getting going any further than it has so far.
Giovanna, the panic that we have sensed in the action or planned action of the authorities before people came to the street on May 21st. So how was their response on the day when this was taking place? In which way you have seen that panic in action on that day?
Well, I mean, I think that the fact that the authorities were prepared to simply just detain hundreds and hundreds of people who were peacefully demonstrating and showing no sign at all of creating any public disorder tells us that the authorities were eager to defuse the situation very quickly on the day. I say defuse, but of course there's always a risk in that kind of situation that it may have the opposite effect. Hmm. However, the demonstrators were peaceful, and yet they were still arrested, as I said, because the authorities believed they were demonstrating against the law without permission. And they were also prepared to hold them for many, many hours in police stations all over the country. Human rights campaigners have pointed out that the rights of many of the detainees were violated, first of all because their right to peaceful assembly, according to legal experts, is guaranteed under the Constitution. Secondly, because they were actually arrested, many of them, and some jailed, as we know, before the protests. And yet, there's not the legal grounds for jailing people in case they commit a crime is somewhat dubious. That's what legal experts say. And also, they were held for more than the stipulated 3 hours that they can be held for after detention. Some were held for up to 10 hours. And so what we see from that is that the authorities really, were determined not to allow these protests to take place.
Mm. Final question before we go into the break. So the response that we have seen, Aygrim, by the authorities on the streets where they were chasing people, beating them, what kind of impression did this reaction by the authorities lift on the people?
I would say they are offended on their government because for many people it was an eye-opening experience. They finally understood in what kind of government they live in, and they were offended to the police and to the government that they are not allowed to tell their own opinions. And but I would say that I didn't see that police beat the people because they, of course, they detained everyone and other things, but they acted not violently. They didn't use, there was no blood, and they didn't beat them, at least what I saw. They just took these people very fast, even if these were like people who are not even protesting. Some of the people were just walking or taking photos, and they also detained them. But they detained as many people as possible, but without using too much violence.
Mm-hmm. I have seen some footages where people were forced to lie down by police were pushing them to lie down or sit down. But obviously we don't see the full picture, mm-hmm. full details of what's happening by looking into some pictures. So thank you, Aygrim. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss where we go from here. Welcome back to the Majlis, a Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Today we are discussing the recent mass protests in Kazakhstan and what does it mean for its future. Discussing the subject with me is Joanna Lilis, Eurasia Net correspondent in Kazakhstan. Also from Kazakhstan, Aygrim Toluhanova, Kazakhstan reporter for the Convoy Bulletin. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, is also joining me. The Kishlak Awazi is a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service at Radio Free Europe. Aygrim, before the break, we were talking about the overall situation, what has happened on May 21st. Now, the fact that people confronted authorities responded with heavy hand, and now the land reform land privatization is pushed back from the agenda. So what we are expecting next to happen in the country?
I honestly don't know what will happen next, but I think that general mood of the people is that they're shocked and they're offended to their own government. And maybe in future there will be another protest that will be even bigger than this one. But I don't know for sure. Now people are... at least those who were actively involved in land reform cancellation, they're now more concerned with political activists who are detained and now facing real time in jail. And that's what they're busy now with. But I would say the feeling of offense is still in them, and it may be it may spark into big flames.
Mm-hmm. It might also depend on how the outcome of this protest is seen by various parties. When I say various parties, there are two parties, I would say, like people and the government. So there was a compromise, Giovanna, at least in terms of pushing back the deadline for this land privatization process to start. So how the outcome is seen by people and also by the authorities?
Well, I agree with Agarin that people are actually very upset. I've certainly never seen them so upset in the 10 years that I've been reporting in Kazakhstan, from Kazakhstan. And certainly, you know, they feel very, very upset that about the land reform. They feel very, very upset that they weren't allowed to express their opinion. Many people who didn't take part in the protest that I've been talking to in Almaty, and I'm talking about ordinary people here who really don't normally get involved in politics, they're saying, why did we see so many people arrested, so many, you know, of our fellow citizens who are merely going out to peacefully express their opinion? So I think, you know, people are very upset. And, you know, this, I think it's safe to say that this is some kind of turning point for Kazakhstan, because it's not something we've seen in 25 years of independence. But I struggle to forecast what may come next. I think analysts that I've spoken to are saying, well, there might be, it's sort of died down at the moment, and there's no sign of people getting together on social media to organize any more protests about this issue, not for now. But of course, there could be, as one analyst put it to me earlier this week, any spark could possibly, you know, reignite some protests. We don't know. And it will all also depend to some degree on the outcome of discussions about how to proceed with land reform. People want this entire thing. Many people, the protesters certainly want this entire reform cancelled, but the government may not be willing to do so. And people, you know, are also a little worried that the commission that's been set up to discuss it is very heavily dominated by the government, by officials, by the ruling Nowatan party, and there really are only a handful of independent voices on it.
Interesting. People are obviously upset, as both of you said, Agrim and Giovanna. Bruce, while people are upset, the fact that authorities in Kazakhstan, as a result of this protest, has done something which is not usually done by any Central Asian countries, to bow to the demands of people. Why was it in Kazakhstan this time?
Well, you know, I think this is actually part of the problem too. When they saw clearly that the land privatization program was unpopular, they thought they could just stop this whole all these tensions, the passion for protest or what have you, by just announcing that we're gonna, you know, we're postponing it and we'll do some review of it and we'll get back to it later. But you know, as I said earlier, and other people have said too, it wasn't, you know, that was just, and Joanna just mentioned the spark, you know, that was just like, you know, the issue that got everyone to come out in the street and vent problem, you know, their unhappiness, discontent with stuff that's been going on for a long time. So, I see the Kazakh government tried to head this off by just saying, okay, you don't want the protest, or you don't want the land privatization, and so we're going to do that, and you know, we'll postpone that. And they figured that would be the end of it, and it hasn't been the end of it, of course. So that does leave them in a strange position, because we already see that since that did work, as far as it seems generally understood among the people out there, that the land privatization thing was canceled because of their protest at the end of April. And so now we have now we've gone up to another level where people that have had other issues that they wanted addressed for a long time feel that this is the time that they should go and make their voice heard about something totally different. And I'll use an example from the Kazakh service today, where people in Shymkent were promised land in the area. And according to our Kazakh service, thousands of people showed up since yesterday to appeal to the local administration and said, you've been promising us land for a long time, and now we want it. And I think you're going to have this propping up in places around Kazakhstan here and there, where people are going to say, you know, we had a promise 3 years ago or 5 years ago or something that something would be done for our situation in our community, and it never got done. And so now we, you know, they're going to feel emboldened to go out there and say, well, we want some action on this right now. And you'll probably, and who knows which of these issues would, as Joanna said, be the spark that would reignite some of this stuff. But like I said earlier, there's a number of issues, and I think the general feeling among the population is, if we're going to try to get some change for ourselves, now is the time.
So, Giovanna, the fact that it, you know, Bruce mentioned one event, but there were several other events taking place in different cities, some with participation of a number of people, some even individually. I'm talking about protest actions, which continue. So, are we going to see more of these kind of actions by the people after this event that we have just had in Kazakhstan?
Well, we're seeing a lull at the moment, but as I say, we're simply in uncharted territory, and I'm afraid I'm not prepared to stick my neck out and make any forecasts. We are in uncharted territory for Kazakhstan, so I think we're just going to have to watch and wait.
So what is the lesson learned by the authorities from this event?
What lessons the authorities have actually learned, but I think one of the lessons that's there to be learned is the fact that you cannot always, in Kazakhstan, although the authorities have done it for many years, you cannot always expect the people to put up with decision-making that doesn't involve them. I mean, there is a very, very top-down style of rule in Kazakhstan that President Nazarbayev towers over the country's political system and is ultimately in charge of all the decisions. Well, certainly, everything comes down to President Nazarbayev and his decision-making. And I think the lesson that's there to be learned is that the people would like to have a say in some of the decisions that concerns them, and that now, at this particular time, the people are actually prepared to go out on the street and try to have their say, even if the authorities try to prevent them.
I agree. So what lessons people learned, or what lessons there are for people to learn from this event?
I would say that more people are dissatisfied with the government. That's the lesson they learned. They saw this difference in what this government media tells them on TV or many other media outlets, that there was no meeting, there was no protest, and no people came out. And they see completely different picture in social media, for example. And they finally understand that the government was lying to them, I guess. And that's the lesson. They see the difference now. More and more people.
Interesting. Bruce, the final note. What's there for international community to learn from this during the day when everything was taking place in Kazakhstan, and also days to follow? International community was, I believe, that's my own interpretation, were very passive to react to what is happening in Kazakhstan in that day, in the days to follow up.
You know, that is true. I wish there was a stronger reaction. There was some governments, particularly in the West, did voice some concern about the fact that the Kazakh authorities had to crack down on the protesters like they did. And of course, these same people, sources, would mention that this government should respect the right for peaceful assembly and for people to express their concerns in a public manner, too. You know, I mean, post-Arab Spring, it's always been a lot harder for governments outside the region, outside Central Asia, particularly in the West, to voice a lot of criticism, because the last thing anyone wants to see is a violent revolution, especially in a country like Kazakhstan, which is a real pivotally located. I mean, it's part of a trade hub. It's been one of the more stable governments, and relative to Central Asia, it's been somewhat more liberal than the others, certainly. So, they don't want to undercut anything there. At the same time, you got to convince the Kazakh government to do the right thing here. And really, I would love to think that the Kazakh government now would want to engage with the people and set up some kind of national forum or something like that, where people could speak with government officials directly, and that everyone would be able to watch that. My experience with Central Asia, unfortunately, is that when these things happen, the lessons the government learns from these kind of events is what went wrong with the security structure, and why was this able to progress as far as it did without it being closed down immediately. And those are usually the lessons that the governments in Central Asia draw, is we messed up because we didn't put enough people in jail right away, or we didn't send a stronger message to people to stay out of the streets or something like that. So we'll have to see how the international response is. Like I said, Kazakhstan is an important country in a lot of ways, and you don't want to push them too far, especially since they're good friends with Russia and China. You don't want to alienate yourself. There's a lot of investment potential there. And like I said, Kazakh government has shown itself to be willing to work with the West at times. Let's face it, it was the chairman of the OSCE, you know, just not too many years ago. So you don't want to be too strong, but on the other hand, you can't let them just shut, you know, become more authoritarian and shut down any chance for change, the changes that the people in the country want.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia Bloc at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, for your insightful thoughts. Also, big thanks goes to Joanna Lillis, EurasiaNet correspondent in Kazakhstan, and Agrim Tuluhanova, Kazakhstan reporter for the Convoy Bulletin. Thank you, colleagues, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.